By listening to the Conscious Fertility Podcast, you agree to not use this podcast as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or others. Consult your own physician or healthcare provider for any medical issues that you may be having. This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast. Welcome to Conscious Fertility, the show that listens to all of your fertility questions so that you can move from fear and suffering to peace of mind and joy. My name is Lauren Brown. I'm a doctor of traditional Chinese medicine and a clinical hypnotherapist. I'm on a mission to explore all the paths to peak fertility and joyful living. It's time to learn how to be and receive so that you can create life on purpose. Welcome to the Conscious Fertility Podcast. And today, our guest is my colleague and friend, Dr. Fiona McCulloch. She has been a practicing licensed naturopathic doctor since 2001 after she graduated from the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine. She's the founder and medical director of White Lotus Integrative Medicine in Toronto, which is a busy urban clinic focused on endocrinology and women's health. Fiona's also the author of the best-selling book, 8 Steps to Reverse Your PCOS. I'm holding up a copy for those that are watching this on the video aspect. A proven program to reset your hormones, repair your metabolism, and restore your fertility. And Fiona has also served as a board member of the Endocrinology Association of Naturopathic Medicine since 2018. And we got to know each other well because she has spoken at a couple of the integrative fertility symposiums that I chaired in Vancouver, BC, and also on the platform that I moderate, Healthy Seminars. Fiona, I'm so glad we're going to talk about fertility and PCOS. Welcome to the Conscious Fertility Podcast.
Thank you so much, Lauren. It's such an honor to be here. I've known you for so long, and it's just been cool to see your evolution through all the years. And this podcast looks like such a great, has so many great topics and speakers. So I'm excited to have a listen and follow you.
And our listeners are going to love you. Again, I got to say your book one more time. You got to get a copy of her book, 8 Steps to Reverse Your PCOS. My listeners know that a lot of the topics are on consciousness, and then some of the episodes are very fertility-based. This is going to be one of those episodes that is very fertility-based, but the mind-body aspect comes into this because often those that are diagnosed with PCOS, because of this metabolic disorder, will struggle with depression, anxiety. So some of those mind-body tools that we talk about in other episodes are very relevant here. Fiona, I thought we would talk about, first of all, can you kind of define like what is PCOS? And I find the title kind of misleading, PCOS. So can you kind of give it your version of really what's happening? Like how would women know they could have this syndrome, PCOS? Why should they be concerned? And then we're definitely going to talk about what they can do to manage these symptoms.
Yeah. So PCOS is called, it stands for polycystic ovary syndrome. And so you would think that it revolves around ovarian cysts. However, there are sometimes cyst-like appearance, so the ultrasound in PCOS. But it really is not at all about ovarian cysts. It's actually an endocrine condition, so it's a hormone imbalance. And at its center, what it revolves around is too much of hormones like testosterone. And the most obvious symptoms are, and not everybody has all of these symptoms at the same time throughout their life. So they can change, which also makes this very confusing. But they are irregular periods. So often the periods are far apart or absent sometimes. And then symptoms of too much testosterone, which can be acne, hair growth on the face, or hair loss from the scalp. So these are the main symptoms really to look out for, I should mention acne as well. These symptoms are the center of PCOS. And sometimes people have infertility, especially if they're not ovulating with PCOS. So that's really how I would define it. And it's an endocrine condition. So it also is thought to be genetic and epigenetic, which means that, we inherit it from our family members.
So a lot of the individuals only find out that they could have this condition when they're trying to conceive and they're having difficulty. But there are some signs that you shared. So I just want to emphasize that if you have irregular cycles, so your cycles are very delayed, like more than 35 days apart, you're suggesting, or you're not having cycles, this could be an indication that you have this syndrome, especially if you have those high androgens, like you talked about, testosterone symptoms like acne and hirsutism and male pattern baldness. What is the reason, or actually let me phrase it this way. In your practice, I'm assuming individuals that come to you often will have had a workup from their endocrinologist, the reproductive endocrinologist coming to you. Can you discuss kind of the Western approach, what they're doing, and then kind of the natural approach? And I would like you to share, because for this podcast, a lot of our listeners are looking for natural approaches. What are the fertility risks, I guess I should say? Like, why should somebody care if they have this metabolic disorder? How can this impact egg quality or implantation? And can these Western approaches fix that? Or is it better to have an integrative approach?
Yeah. So, and I love that you brought up metabolic disorder, because even though it's not considered, you know, the main part of PCOS, a lot of patients with PCOS have something called insulin resistance. And this causes basically weight gain around the stomach. It increases the risk for diabetes, heart disease. So it is also a lot of this type of thing is going on in PCOS as well. So when we think about fertility with PCOS, part of this is about, you know, there might be a problems with ovulating, because these irregular cycles happen because there's less ability to ovulate. So sometimes, you know, patients don't even ovulate at all. And this is because the testosterone blocks the ovulation. So one of the things to think about is that element, you know, ovulation. But the other thing to think about is that what we know now is that PCOS, it is really inherited. So there's a lot of genes that are linked to this condition. And a lot of those genes are really about conserving energy. And, you know, in times of where we might not have had enough food, but in our current environment, we have a lot of really, you know, food that's very high in sugar, or, you know, fast food and things like that. Patients with PCOS, the genes they have are actually conservation genes. So they tend to overstore energy from this type of environment that we live in. So some of it is really, you know, when we're exposed to that environment, those genes are more activated. So when we're thinking about fertility with PCOS and working on, you know, those natural elements to improve our health, we're actually really helping our future generations' health. Preventing, you know, some of the expression of the PCOS genes or metabolic problems like type 2 diabetes. So it really goes pretty deep into things that way, because we know very much that it is very much affected by our environment, PCOS.
Can we unpack that a little bit? So if there's a genetic component and you have PCOS, are there things that you can do now while you're trying to conceive, so leading up to conception and in your pregnancy, that could, even though your child, say your daughter, may have this gene, they may not express PCOS? Or are there things that you can do now to impact your future child?
Yes, definitely. So with PCOS, when we're working on that condition, if somebody happens to have insulin resistance, for example, there's a variety of different supplements that can help. Inositol is probably one of the best known ones. But the nutrition that we take into our body, the food that we eat, the exercise we do, all of those things really impact the expression of PCOS. And as embryos are developing in pregnancy, those genes are less activated when we're taking care of those parts of our environment. So there is quite a lot you can do with PCOS.
I want you to continue on this, but we should mention, because you said those embryos developing while you're pregnant, because for our listeners, that if you're carrying a female child, her ovaries have all the follicles in them already. So that's what you're talking about when you say you can impact the embryos, or not the embryos, but the follicles inside that developing baby.
Exactly. And also, yeah, so that's such a great point. Like, the future generations, if you have a female baby, the ovaries of that baby are developing. And that is sort of what seems to turn on those PCOS genes, you know, and then that baby's babies are in the ovaries. So it's pretty profound if you think about it, because what they found is if you can do things like manage diabetes in pregnancy, or, you know, improve all of these elements before pregnancy, a lot of this can improve. So yeah, there's a lot that can be done when you think about it. It's quite mind-boggling.
And I apologize for interrupting you there, but as you say certain things, I want to highlight things, and it keeps me thinking of other questions for you. So we will go back to some of our original questions, but I kind of want to go back to our listeners who right now are like, you know, I can't even get pregnant right now. So I'll worry about what I'm going to do when I'm pregnant once I'm there. Can you help me get pregnant? So in the West, they'll use ovulatory drugs like letrozole or Clomid, or if needed, IVF to help women often that have this diagnosis of PCOS. But in your practice, have you found that sometimes they may get pregnant and they miscarry? And if so, how is that related to this PCOS condition?
Yeah, there's definitely an increased risk of miscarriage. It's partly the egg quality. So in PCOS, there's a lot of eggs, actually. So when we test the anti-Müllerian hormone level in PCOS, it's often very, very high. So there's usually a lot of eggs in the ovary, but these eggs, they don't function optimally because of the testosterone. The good news is a lot of these different things can be changed, but unfortunately, sometimes that can cause a miscarriage. If that egg quality isn't as good, then there can be an increased risk of that. But also insulin resistance, which is what we see very commonly in PCOS, you know, with increased weight gain, especially around the midsection, high blood sugar, those types of symptoms, that's also associated to miscarriage risk. And then finally, as well, there's sometimes low progesterone, which can increase the risk of miscarriage in PCOS as well. So there's a few different reasons.
I think I remember in your book, you shared how the high androgen, so the testosterone and the insulin resistance, even high AMH can alter the structure and function of the follicle. So there's your egg quality. So more reason to do that preconception care before you go into an ovulatory drug like letrozole or Clomid or IVF cycle, so you can have the embryo at its peak fertility potential. And then also, I believe in your book, you talk about inflammation, insulin and its clotting, and other hormonal metabolic dysregulation that impacts the lining. So it can also impact the uterine receptivity and the embryo's ability to implant as well, this syndrome?
Definitely, yes. It can definitely implant the lining in many ways. Like, the lining is dependent on the hormone balance. So that is usually often PCOS. And then inflammation definitely affects the lining. Insulin resistance also can affect the endometrial lining. So that my preference is, like, personally, I feel more than almost any other condition, sometimes patients with PCOS are put into fertility treatment because they have good AMH. They're like, oh, you're going to do very well, you know, because your AMH is so great. You don't need to do anything. Just go right in and do it. But, you know, if they work on egg quality and their overall health first, the difference is massive in the results that they get when they do fertility treatment.
So that's kind of our approach in our practice as well in Vancouver. We tend to want to help support the environment to help the egg reach its peak fertility potential and the uterine receptivity. Do you have any stories you want to share? And then I thought we could talk about some of the steps that you like to manage the symptoms of PCOS. But do you have, just to share how you would, to use a story to how you address this in clinic? Because I'm sure somebody's come to you saying, I got to do the IVF right away, or I'm going to do this letrozole, or they've done cycles before and they haven't been successful. What is your approach? And do you have any stories to cheer us up, to show us that there are things that can be done to help these individuals?
Yeah, definitely. So I can give an example of one of my patients. She has extremely high AMH. I always look at AMH. If it's extremely high, that is not a good thing with PCOS. So this patient, her AMH, I think, was 95 or something. It's really, really, really high.
That's in Canadian values, picomole per liter, because we have a lot of American listeners.
Yeah, sorry. That's right. That is that one. And but, you know, it's really astronomically high. And she had never ovulated on her own, ever. And a lot of these patients, they'll never have ovulated naturally. And you know, sometimes when you are diagnosed with PCOS, you're told right off the bat, you're not going to be able to get pregnant. So just, like, come on back whenever you're ready. And so this patient goes to the fertility clinic, goes through a cycle, you know, and there's so many eggs, right? But none of them are good. And she gets hyperstim, which is another risk. She does it again another time, same result. And then she is told that she's going to have to do egg donation. And this is a young woman, you know, maybe 28, I think, at the time. So it's a little, you know, really, you know, does this person really need egg donation at this age? They have a lot of eggs. But unfortunately, a lot of patients are told that they just, their eggs are all bad and they'll never be good. And that's absolutely not true in PCOS. So then this patient came in and we just started working on her PCOS in a general sense. So we worked really intensely on egg quality with inositol. We also did cyclic progesterone, about 6 months of cycles of that. And we were able to get her testosterone much lower. Her AMH was around half by the time we finished, around 6 months. And she actually ovulated on her own and got pregnant naturally. So there you go. There's, you know, and I see stories like that frequently. It's not an uncommon story.
I imagine, because for me, it's one of my, and I'll use this word loosely, but favorite conditions when it comes into my practice, because it's something I think we can manage really well using diet, nutraceuticals like supplements, herbs, acupuncture, low-level laser therapy. We just see, if we have time, I'll share some stories like yours. So for the listeners, there is a lot of things you can do. And you and I, the patients we see are the more challenging cases, because the ones that have a PCOS and they use letrozole or Clomid, they get pregnant right away. We don't see them because the drug forced ovulation and the quality was good enough, yeah. Implantation happened. You and I, yeah. And people like us that have naturopathic Chinese medicine practices, we see those that the letrozole and the Clomid and the IVF have not worked. And then they come to us. And
yes.
And then we still sometimes are able to manage or reverse those symptoms where they go on to conceive either naturally or sometimes their next IUI letrozole cycle works. So we'll talk more about that, or yeah. Maybe we'll get into kind of like, so what can we do? Like you mentioned the inositols. I'd like to read out your 8 steps that you share in your book, and then maybe we can talk about a few of them. So in Dr. Fiona McCulloch's book, 8 Steps to Reverse Your PCOS, she lists them as address inflammation, treat insulin resistance, address adrenals and improve mood, treat excess androgens, address hormonal imbalances, balance your thyroid, create a healthy environment, eat a balanced diet. So can you touch a little bit about inflammation? So what is your concern with inflammation?
Yeah, inflammation is... basically, I'll just sort of define it first, but say if we get an infection, our body uses inflammation to kill bacteria and to resolve tissue damage and different things like that. So we do want to have inflammation, but we don't want to have it all the time, you know, because this is a process that's supposed to kind of turn on and off to take care of different problems in the body. But in PCOS, there's a predisposition to chronic inflammation. And this means that there's just inflammation there all the time. And that inflammation, if you think about it, it's normally used to kill bacteria and different organisms that can actually cause damage to our cells. And that's what we know to be true, is that most chronic disease is, you know, has inflammation in this. And inflammation is not great for our egg quality at all, because this causes what we call oxidative stress to the eggs, which decreases their quality overall. But also it can damage our heart or blood vessels. It can cause insulin resistance. It can cause depression and anxiety as well. Depression and anxiety. So there's a lot of different things that inflammation can cause. So in PCOS, the number one element that causes inflammation, I would say, is insulin resistance. But there's also a lot of people who have PCOS who have other types of inflammation too. So they might have autoimmune diseases. They could have some kind of a histamine problem, that sort of inflammation. There's just a lot of different types of inflammation in PCOS. And the ways that we can manage that are to look for any causes of that. So if there's, say, somebody has Hashimoto's, managing their Hashimoto's. If they have insulin resistance, helping them manage that. And we can use antioxidants to help with inflammation. So it really depends on the person, how you would address that, the inflammation overall. There's a lot of different approaches.
And I think our listeners will learn that we're going to talk about a few of these steps, but it's always been my experience now that it's kind of a multidisciplinary, holistic approach, meaning each of the things that we talk about, like the insulin resistance, the inflammation, the androgens, the hormones, the thyroid, it's diet. You know, we use diet, we use lifestyle, right? Sleep, rest, exercise, stress reduction. Then there's nutraceuticals, there's herbs, there's acupuncture and low-level laser therapy and other things. So there's all these things that are addressing all these different aspects that can impact the cellular health, in this case, the egg quality or uterine receptivity. So we talked a little bit about inflammation. insulin resistance is obviously one of the common things that we see. And back to the inflammation, I've heard you talk in some of our lectures I've seen you do, the gut microbiome can impact inflammation as well, right? So that's so many things. So like you said, it's not just inflammation. You got to find the cause and then address it. And it can come from autoimmune condition. You talk often about, and I've seen in my practice, when we do our workup, we often see a vitamin D deficiency and thyroid antibodies show up with our women with PCOS. And that's been your experience as well. Has that been correlated? Is that kind of like a common thing now known in the literature?
Yes, there is definitely a lot more deficiency of vitamin C. And we actually use more vitamin D when we have inflammation, insulin resistance. So there's a link between vitamin D deficiency and PCOS for a bunch of reasons. So it's always super important to make sure that you take your vitamin D.
Going back to our list, so address inflammation. I'm going to ask this question a little differently. You talk about treating the insulin resistance, look at the adrenals and the mood, excess androgens, hormonal imbalances, the thyroid. Can you share that in your practice when somebody comes in and how do you walk them through? Is there a certain testing you always do and kind of what is your approach? And then maybe we'll talk about some of the specifics, but like, you know, do you do supplements? Do you do acupuncture? I'm curious what you do in your practice to manage those that have PCOS and how do you often assess it as well in your practice?
Yeah. So I think it really depends on the stage they're at in life, because I get people coming in for all different, you know, some are teenagers, some are fertility, and some are, you know, perimenopause and that sort of thing. So I always go through a full case review and I look at all the old labs that they've ever had done, because PCOS is a lifelong condition. So it's really interesting to look at like the entire, you know, how they've started off and like where they've gone. So I always do like a really detailed review of all of their history. And then I look at everything that they're currently taking. And then I assess all the different areas. So I'll usually run lab tests for inflammation, insulin resistance hormones, like androgens, cortisol, sometimes very important because stress and mood disorders are very common in PCOS. So we'll assess all those different areas. Some people might, for example, have a chronic gut infection. So we would test that. So it's very individual, depends on the person. So we look for any, you know, sources of inflammation. Then basically we just go through all of that and, you know, correct. There are certain things that, you know, you'd want to kind of correct first. Insulin resistance takes a very long time to treat compared to other things. So I'll usually start treating that earlier in the process. If somebody's goal is to get pregnant, we always, you know, start working on an egg quality right away as well, because that does take longer. And I do use a lot of cyclic progesterone therapy for PCOS, because this is basically giving natural progesterone for 14 days on and 14 days off every month. And this is a way to lower the LH hormone. This is a hormone that is often very high in PCOS that causes us to make testosterone. So it does address that. So I tend to use that therapy a lot. But yeah, it's very individual. Lots of nutrition, lifestyle. But again, you know, everyone's different. Some patients with eating have PCOS have eating disorders. You know, so many individual considerations.
And some of that, like if it's binge eating or eating disorders, some of it comes from the hormonal imbalance, correct? Like it's how it's impacting the brain and what we...
Yeah, it really is. It's so common. And there's a lot of blood sugar imbalances and changes in our appetite hormones in the brain with PCOS. So it is very physical, because a lot of the time you'll see these things improve. But then again, society is, you know, terrible right now, especially with social media. So there's a lot of stress and pressure around that as well.
And then can you tie into the mechanism and how this impacts fertility? Because in your 8 steps, you talk about treat insulin resistance and treat excess androgen. So can you talk a little bit about why you want to do that? And then again, some of your approaches.
Yeah, the insulin resistance, it's so important because the insulin actually drives the production of these androgens like testosterone. And it also is probably one of the strongest elements that doesn't get better with age. So with many patients with PCOS, I'm pretty sure you've probably seen this too, Lauren. They start ovulating when they get a bit older. So when they're around 35, they might actually start having regular cycles, whereas before they didn't. And that's great. But unfortunately, the insulin resistance part does not tend to get better as patients with PCOS get a bit older. So that one is really important to address because it's a bit, I always call it like a snowball. The bigger it gets, the more hard it is to roll it back the other way. So if you can see it and start working on that earlier, then I always consider that one to be a really important area to focus on.
And then you talk often about the androgen excess, and maybe you can talk about the name PCOS, why it is confusing for many, because in my practice, the majority of the women I see actually don't have polycystic ovaries. So they're confused.
Yeah.
And I know, can you share how the androgens create that, how it suppresses your ovulation and why sometimes they'll have what looks like these string of pearls? And how are they different than somebody that has an ovarian cyst then?
Yeah. So the cysts in polycystic ovary syndrome are basically follicles. They're basically, you know, the eggs that didn't fully ovulate. So they're sort of accumulated around the outside of the ovary. They're not really cysts. So they're more, you know, they're actually eggs. The younger we are, the more eggs we have. So you tend to see the ultrasound in young women more, especially teenagers. And unfortunately, you can see this in a lot of people that don't have PCOS when they're young because they have a lot of these eggs. And especially if they have any reason at all that's interfering with their ovulation, even just being a normal teenager, it's normal not to ovulate regularly. They often will have that look. So it's very important not to diagnose it because as you get a bit older, many patients don't have this look. But the cause of that, so I don't really worry about the cysts themselves, but the testosterone, so the androgens, are really the problem. And they actually block the ovulation. So as the eggs are growing, the androgens are actually made by the eggs. And the brain, the LH hormone that's too high in PCOS, this causes the egg to grow parts of itself that make too much testosterone, and that just stops the eggs from developing. So they kind of get stopped and blocked by the androgens. So it is quite important to manage that. My favorite way is with progesterone. But another really important thing to know is that when you have insulin resistance, all the androgens you make become instantly more intense and powerful because the way that they're bound up, they become more free when you have insulin resistance. So that is a really powerful way to work on androgens, is to work on insulin resistance.
And we should talk a little bit about some of your favorite supplements then that you are using in your practice. I know there's many and you go over a lot in your book, but are there kind of the common ones that you're like, yeah, if somebody has a diagnosis of PCOS, I'd be thinking of a handful of these supplements?
So I think it depends on if you're looking for fertility treatment, but I'm going to go through some of my favorite ones. Inositol, it's such a staple. Like, it's really helpful for insulin resistance and for egg quality. So that one is almost essential for almost anyone with PCOS. There's N-acetylcysteine. This is an antioxidant. This can help with insulin resistance and egg quality and androgen excess. It's not a strong anti-androgen, but it does help to a degree with that. Berberine is another favorite supplement. This one's really good for insulin resistance and inflammation. So that's definitely a favorite. I also use herbs quite a lot. So peony, licorice, black cohosh are a few favorites that I'll use. Sometimes I use saw palmetto.
In common, the inositols and NAC are kind of my staples. Often I like vitamin D as well for those that have been, if we test it, if they're low, then we'll go a higher dose. But similar ideas. And then I love the low-level laser therapy because it helps regulate blood sugars. It helps regulate inflammation, increases blood flow, improves mitochondrial function. So a lot of things, especially that, how the systemic effect on inflammation. And then there's the acupuncture as well. And I know you're trained in acupuncture as well as an RAC. So things that we can, again, that multidisciplinary approach, are we addressing the, because when we talk about the fertility aspect, we're looking at uterine receptivity, we're looking at egg quality. And there's, as you said, A lot of the women we see are young in their reproductive age still, and they have high AMH or lots of follicles, but hey, they're not getting pregnant, or they're getting pregnant and they're miscarrying. And so the message I see in your book is to support the cellular environment so the follicle can reach its peak potential. And you do this by addressing inflammation, by addressing insulin resistance, the adrenals, the androgens, hormonal imbalances. And so that follicle during those 100 days leading up to ovulation or an IVF retrieval, they're in that good cellular environment. And you like diet, you got supplements, there's herbs, and as I share, acupuncture and low-level laser therapy. You mentioned progesterone as well, natural progesterone. Can you differentiate then? Because when you talk about cyclical progesterone, I'm thinking some of the individuals be saying, well, I do a progesterone withdrawal every once in a while to get my bleed. Is that what you're talking about, or is this something a little different?
Yeah, it's a little different. So the withdrawal to get the bleed is using synthetic progestin, which is called medroxyprogesterone. And that's a good way to just shed the lining one time. Cyclic progesterone is using natural progesterone. So this is actually the same type that fertility clinics use in suppositories. It's not in the same type that's in birth control. And the way that this is done is it's given every month for 14 days on and off. And it can lower the LH hormone that causes you to make testosterone. This is what happens actually naturally in our cycles every month to keep our LH from being very high at the beginning. But if a patient doesn't ovulate, they actually don't make any progesterone. So this is part of their imbalance. It's almost like training wheels for their ovulatory cycle between their brain and their ovary. So it's a really cool treatment, specifically though, for patients that don't ovulate regularly. So usually this works well for patients with, you know, far apart cycles or who have high testosterone. It will work for them as well.
In my practice, a lot of the younger individuals went on birth control pill to manage acne, right? And then they come off the birth control pill and they don't ovulate. And that's when they go for more investigation. So I've always thought, and I don't want to put words in her mouth, but we both know Dr. Geralyn Pryor. I think it was at one of her lectures, but the idea is that the birth control pill doesn't treat PCOS. It's a strategy to help like symptoms with acne, but I think she shared it can actually aggravate insulin resistance. And so there's other ways to address this than just the birth control pill. Do you have anything to share on that? Because that was like over a decade ago, I heard her say something like that, maybe 15 years ago. So lots of things have happened since. But what about young women that are going to go on the birth control pill to manage their cycle acne? Is there a risk that it can aggravate PCOS, or it's not going, or regardless, when you get off the birth control pill, that's when you'll start to find out you have it?
Yeah, so this is actually super common. A lot of people are put on birth control pills very young, and then they, you know, don't even know they have PCOS, and they learn that when they come off of it. So there's a lot of problems with that. I think one is not knowing the full extent of the situation you're dealing with. If you go on it very young, there's a certain window that of time that your cycles become regular within. And if you kind of go on the pill in that time, you didn't mature your reproductive axis fully. So you may need to do that when you come off the pill, regardless of having PCOS. But secondly, if somebody does have PCOS, we don't really know, you know, because a lot of the time they're not testing for insulin resistance. We don't know the full extent of what's actually going on there. So when they come off of it, you know, then we're going to see the situation, but it takes time for that to, you know, really present itself. So that's one of the issues. And then, you know, there's androgen rebound. So when you come off of the pill, your androgens can become even higher. So that's another potential issue. So yeah, it's something that I'm, you know, not against the pill at all in any way if people need to use it for whatever, you know, reason. But I think sometimes people are not explained why they're taking it, or, you know, what really they're not getting to. Because when you're on it, you really can't test your hormones at that point. They all look low. So it's just missing that opportunity, not treating it when you're younger, and then having to do that later is, in my opinion, one of the worst problems with giving the pill to young teens.
Yeah. So if you're giving the birth control pill to a young teen to manage, say, like acne, severe acne, that's the most common reason we see people go on it. There's still things you can be doing while they're on the birth control pill. So when they go off it, hopefully those symptoms don't come back. And for those that have found out that they're not ovulating or they have PCOS since they've come off the birth control pill, Fiona has shared that there's at least 8 steps and more that you can do to help manage these symptoms. So it's you can still deal with it and work with what you have, is what I'm hearing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's always stuff that you can do, especially with PCOS.
I got a couple rapid-fire questions that I've received that I want to ask you. But before, if you have another story, I'd love to hear it. I shared one when I interviewed our colleague, Sandra Grassa, who's on the podcast, also on the PCOS. And in that one, I talk about somebody who never ovulates, even with ovulation drugs. So she did IVF, and the first one was a chemical, so it miscarried, and the second one didn't work, and she came for a frozen embryo transfer. She wanted me to help balance her hormones. She wanted her androgens to be lowered because she thought it could be impacting with her implantation. And I shared with what we do here, if it helps, she may start to ovulate on her own. So we'll see what happens if we're able to regulate her hormones. So we did the diet, the lifestyle, supplements, herbs, acupuncture, and low-level laser therapy. And she saw all these changes in her health, like she lost weight without counting calories, her hirsutism reduced, her acne was gone, her mood stabilized, her gut got better, and she ovulated and conceived naturally. She never got to use that frozen embryo transfer. And so that's kind of my favorite story, because without even with medications, they couldn't force ovulation. And then just through all these changes naturally, her hormones came back on. It kind of reminded me of your story. But I always find that it's nice to hear some stories. So do you have another example of somebody that came in and that you're able to support on her journey?
Yeah. Some of the neat stories I have are patients who basically went with PCOS. Sometimes it's worse when you're younger and it gets better when you're older. So a lot of the time people are like, well, I can't get pregnant because I was trying like my whole 20s and nothing happened. So there's no chance, you know? And then some of the patients will come in, you know, after having really severe insulin resistance. I can think of one patient in particular. She had been through so many things, and some of the patients, the way they eat and the exercise and everything they do is amazing compared to your average person. They're doing so much more, but they're still not losing weight. And, you know, everyone is judging them. But this one patient, she had been working, you know, been told to just lose weight is a common thing that patients are told. She'd been trying for her whole 20s, had done literally everything, still had never ovulated, was doing withdrawal bleeds with Medroxy. Finally came in. She was like, I don't even like think I can get pregnant. It's not a thing because now I'm older. Now I'm too old and my egg quality is no good anymore. And, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, actually, it's probably a lot better than it used to be. But, you know, she's like, I just want to work on insulin resistance. I want to work on my mood because there's a lot of mood disorders, depression and anxiety with PCOS. Not, you know, just being dismissed for decades is part of it, I'm sure. But just generally, the condition itself, having a lot of inflammation can cause mood disorders. So we worked on a lot of different things with her. And I find with insulin resistance, a really individual approach is best, like just working with someone, helping them figure out their daily life of what are the things they're going to eat, like how what's going to help them, you know, get their required sleep for the night and these types of things. So just gradually working with this patient over probably 6 to 9 months, she had done so well. She started to gain a lot of muscle mass, was able to lose a lot of the abdominal fat that she had, and then started ovulating and having cycles and spontaneously conceived, you know, again. So it's really one of those ones where if you just work on the health elements, you can see really amazing, miraculous things. So even for patients who feel like they can't conceive, it's, you know, really surprising to see the results sometimes.
And again, why I really, when this comes into my clinic, somebody diagnosed with PCOS, I usually am optimistic, usually, because it's something that both the West and natural, like naturopathic Chinese medicine, has a really good approach. And then often those ovulation drugs will work for them as well if that's their goal to get pregnant and IVF. So usually either natural works, either the Western works, or sometimes they need the integrative. So usually there's a good chance they're going to be able to get a take-home baby. So some of the questions I have is metformin compared to like taking berberine and inositol. Can you do them together? Because some people are on metformin for the insulin, but yet they've read or have been recommended berberine and the inositols. Can they be combined, or is it kind of one or the other?
Yeah, a lot of people ask that. So they actually can be combined. I always just do one at a time, you know, just slowly. But I have many patients on them together, even all three.
Okay. And then the thyroid and Hashimoto's thyroid autoimmune conditions and PCOS, is there a connection? That was a question somebody has sent me.
Oh, yeah, definitely Hashimoto's. There's an increased incidence for sure. So I think it's a 35% increase in Hashimoto's, something I think it depends on the study you look at, but it's definitely more common. And what I find is that other inflammatory autoimmune, like all of the autoimmune disorders, are more common with PCOS because of the inflammatory element that it has.
And then something to remind those that have the Hashimoto's thyroid condition and PCOS, get pregnant, have baby. You talk about in your book to look at doing some testing about 6 months after giving birth, because what this condition can do, some of the postpartum issues. So they can be proactive. Can you share a little bit? Because I know it's in her book, everybody. So do check out her book. But I love to talk about this part. Just there's so many people that struggle after giving birth. And with PCOS or Hashimoto's, there is some testing and things, interventions you can do so you can really enjoy your postpartum and your baby.
Yeah, because a lot of the time we're told, oh, postpartum is normal to feel horrible. You're just going to feel like a zombie and, you know, just expect that. So that, you know, isn't entirely true. So if you don't feel well after having a baby, there is a much higher incidence of developing a thyroiditis, which is an inflammation of the thyroid. Usually it's within 6 months of having a baby. So this is more common in anyone who has Hashimoto's or PCOS. So I always recommend to check the thyroid, TSH, T3, T4, and the two thyroid antibodies around 6 months after or sooner. If you don't feel well, definitely have a check of that, because it's normal to be tired, but not to be extremely tired or to feel terrible after having a baby.
And then if you could name this condition, because polycystic ovarian syndrome seems to be confusing and misleading, as you shared as we chatted, that many of the individuals don't actually have the cystic ovaries, these polycystic ovaries. What do you think is a better name for it? Or what's the latest that they're using as their diagnostic criteria and naming it?
I believe, you know, I'm not entirely convinced that the name should be changed at this moment. And the reason is that people are starting to recognize it. And if we change it, it's going to be more confusing.
Okay. Forget the branding. So, not for the branding awareness, but based on what it is in the body. How's that? how it shows up in the body.
So they have two names. There's one of them is metabolic. It's metabolic reproductive. There's one, it's called metabolic androgen excess, and the other one is reproductive androgen excess.
Okay.
I can't remember the exact names of them, but those two, there's almost like two types. Yeah. One is metabolic androgen excess and the other is reproductive. So they actually have two possible names. And I think that personally, the androgen excess should be included in the name, and that it's difficult to know if the word metabolic should be, because 70% of patients have that issue and 30% don't.
Gotcha.
So I think I don't know personally what the name should be.
And as we wrap up, that androgen excess, which seems to be a key component, there is both lab value, so from serum blood tests, and symptomology. So what are the common, because you could have normal androgens on your labs, but you could have symptoms, and that would be considered part of the diagnostic criteria. What are the key high androgen signs, so somebody could start to consider, maybe I have this, and consult their naturopathic doctor or their medical doctor?
Yeah, the androgens in the lab test. So the first thing is that these androgens, the reference ranges that they have, a lot of people are right up at the top of the range. And that's actually still pretty high, because if you look at where people are on average, there's usually a certain level that people are at their age, and testosterone goes down with age. So even if it's up at the top and somebody's 35, that's actually pretty high. So with PCOS, that's why they include both the lab value and the clinical signs, because sometimes as we get older, that'll never be above that range, but it still might be causing hair growth on your face or acne or hair loss. So that's why they do include both of those criteria, because the lab testing for androgens is not super accurate, unfortunately.
And the last question I have for you, one of those rapid fire ones that I didn't do during rapid fire. So if this androgens are an issue, in an IVF process, the priming's often androgel and androgen. So how do I get my head around this? Because I don't want to hurt my egg quality, but yet my IVF clinic says I need to take androgel. Is this different than high androgens in PCOS? What's the mechanism? Why are they using it in IVF? Mm-hmm. And then why are we trying to address it in PCOS?
So with androgens, there's like a sweet spot and your eggs need them, but not too much. So if there's a deficiency of testosterone, that's also bad for egg quality. And we'll tend to see that as women get older, not so much in PCOS. And that's why we see there is an extension of the fertile window in PCOS, where that egg quality, it's better a little bit later. And it's thought that the androgens are part of that reason. But we wouldn't usually give, you know, androgens to a patient with PCOS. But the patients who don't have it, who have low androgens and low egg quality, they're the ones who could benefit because they're raising them up into that sweet spot where they're deficient.
Yeah, and it's used in a priming cycle to help recruit a few more follicles, right?
Yeah.
And I heard an REI once say part of the difference as well is in PCOS, it's chronic. You're having it for months and years, this high androgenic environment. And in an IVF, it's a month before, weeks or month only. So it's an acute phase. And like you said, there's a sweet spot. So it's a little bit different there as well.
It's very different.
So I want to encourage people to check out Dr. Fiona McCulloch's website. Go to whitelotusclinic.ca. Also, pick up a copy of her book, 8 Steps to Reverse Your PCOS, a proven program to reset your hormones, repair your metabolism, and restore your fertility. Fiona, thank you so much for joining me today on the Conscious Fertility Podcast.
Thanks for having me on, Lauren.
And I just want to add again for our listeners from the conscious aspect, as Fiona mentioned, PCOS, often there's that inflammatory component and it can lead to anxiety and depression. So a lot of the tools that I do in my practice with the conscious work and that we share on our podcast can be beneficial because when we lower the stress response, that can help then lower inflammation and those stress hormones and also impact your blood sugars. Same with getting good sleep. If you're not sleeping well, then find a natural approach to support your sleep because that can impact cortisol levels, which impacts insulin resistance and impacts inflammation and your androgens. So if you're looking for that holistic approach, and hopefully the message we got across here is that there's an integrative approach that's often most beneficial. A lot of people can go ahead with an ovulation drug like letrozole or Clomid, and that works and they're able to get pregnant. Our goal has always been healthy baby. And as Fiona talked about at the beginning, there's an epigenetic impact, meaning that genes get turned on and off. And what's happening to you in the months leading up to conception and during conception can impact your child's expression of PCOS or this syndrome. And so our goal is not just to get pregnant. So even before you would do ovulation drugs, we would recommend implementing the dietary strategies, the lifestyle, the stress reduction, some of the supplements, and if needed, herbs and acupuncture and low-level laser therapy to help create that environment so you maximize or reach your peak fertility potential before doing those drugs. In clinical reality, most people come to us because those have not worked, and so they're looking for another avenue to support them. And in my practice, many of these individuals go on to conceive naturally, or after 3 to 6 months, it does take some time to address these symptoms and change that environment, they go and do another medicated cycle, and then that one works. And we've seen people even after, as I shared earlier, unsuccessful IVF work. Our clinic and other clinics do this naturally, and 6 months later, they're that much older, but they do another IVF cycle, and that one works. So as usual, unfortunately, in the reproductive world, I've never heard of a magic bullet that you do this and it always works. However, when it comes to those that have ovulatory disorders related to polycystic ovarian syndrome, I have seen and received more research that implementing these natural approaches, which includes diet, lifestyle, which would be exercise, rest, and good sleep, and then implementing certain supplements. My faves are N-acetylcysteine and myinositol. And then we'll add other ones like vitamin D and omega-3s. And there's other supplements we can add, but NAC and inositols and berberine are some of our favorites, can help change that cellular health and follicular environment. So you can go on to either conceive naturally or have a different response when you use an ovulatory drug or go through an IVF, both from the embryo quality and the uterine receptivity and that environment that the baby's going to grow in over those 9 months, which is going to impact their genetic blueprint. So last time I'll mention this because the podcast is ending, but check out Fiona's book, 8 Steps to Reverse Your PCOS. And on the AccuBalance.ca website, if you use their search function, we have multiple blogs on PCOS. We have women sharing their stories being treated with PCOS. And we have a few recipes that you can download as well for PCOS specifically. And we have our fertility diet that's free to download as well, the diet book. Wishing you all the best of luck.
If you're looking for support to grow your family, contact AccuBalance Wellness Center. At AccuBalance, they help you reach your peak fertility potential through their integrative approach, using low-level laser therapy, fertility acupuncture, and naturopathic medicine. Download the AccuBalance Fertility Diet and Dr. Brown's video for mastering manifestation and clearing subconscious blocks. Go to AccuBalance.ca, that's AccuBalance.ca.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Conscious Fertility, the show that helps you receive life on purpose. Please take a moment to subscribe to the show and join the community of women and men on their path to peak fertility and choosing to live consciously on purpose. I would love to continue this conversation with you, so please direct message me on Instagram at Lauren Brown Official. That's Instagram, Lauren Brown Official. Or you can visit my websites, laurenbrown.com and AccuBalance.ca. Until the next episode, stay curious, and for a few moments, bring your awareness to your heart center and breathe.